Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. This is Nancy Clare, and today on the podcast we have Mariah Fredericks, whose second book in her Jane Prescott series, Death of a New American, has just been published. Welcome, Mariah.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be talking with you.
And there's lots of congratulations to go around. Not only was Death of a New American just published, but you are also nominated for the Mary Higgins Clark Award, which will be presented at the Edgars next month, for your first book, which was A Death of No Importance.
Yes, next week. The awards are next week.
Are you going to be dressed to kill for that?
You know, I went shopping today. I took the plunge, and I tried on many very expensive dresses, which were too much for me. But I have hope I'm going to go looking again tomorrow, so we'll see.
Well, best of luck. I know it's an honor just to be nominated, and you have
Absolutely.
Some tough competition, but I think you're right up there in the running. I'm sure of it.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, I've read all the books, and losing to any of them would be no shame at all. It's a great lineup.
So, when we spoke last year about A Death of No Importance, you know, I was struck by your prescience on the subject of the relentless assaults on women, physical, economical, and psychological. And that's certainly still a factor, but in this book, it's the role of immigration in general, and immigrants in particular, that form a central core of your story. You went same as it ever was, right?
Right. You know, sort of the framing metaphor, or one of them for the book, is the Titanic. And one of the early narratives with that event was that people from steerage, immigrants, had rushed on to the top deck and pulled their betters out of the lifeboat in order to selfishly save themselves. And that image, because the book is set in 1912, of people grabbing seats in the economic lifeboat that people feel they don't deserve, was just too powerful to ignore. So I really, and also given recent political climate, I really wanted to explore how we managed our differences about immigration in the past.
And the sinking of the Titanic is sort of shadows the entire book. And when Jane's employers, she's a lady's maid, and so when Jane's employers, who are called, their name is the Benchleys, They're sort of nouveau riche. They've newly come into money, and they figure the wedding of Louise, their daughter, and William Tyler, who's socially connected but poor, sort of the opposite of them, will be overshadowed by the outpouring of grief at the loss of so many socially prominent New Yorkers. This really consumed the city, didn't it?
Yes, the reaction was huge, because many prominent families did lose family members. And the early reports were that nobody had been lost, that everyone had just proceeded to the lifeboats and everything was fine. So it was a terrible shock when people learned that overnight 1,500 people had drowned. And it really, you know, the narratives about who was saved, who was lost, it had a profound impact on the city.
And, of course, because of this social upheaval of the Titanic sinking and the appropriateness of having a grand wedding, the wedding venue for Louise and William is moved to the North Shore of Long Island, where his uncle, Charles Tyler, has a mansion. Charles is an interesting character. He wasn't in the first book that I recall. He works for the NYPD and is not someone who assumes that all immigrants in general, Italians in particular, are part of organized crime. And, you know, Tyler has brought Italians into his home in various jobs, and He seems to be like a larger-than-life figure in this story in many ways. And did you model him, you know, Teddy Roosevelt immediately came to mind, and I was wondering if he was part of the inspiration.
Definitely. You know, I watched the Ken Burns documentary on the Roosevelts a few years ago, and I knew Franklin and Eleanor's story fairly well, but the contradictions in Teddy's character were fascinating to me, and he was much more compelling and charismatic and spoke to a lot of issues that we're facing today in a way that was much more interesting. I mean, I sort of had the sort of bull moose, Rough Rider image of him, and he was an extremely intelligent man. So, and he just had a huge, you know, great American personality that I thought would work for this book.
Of course, you know, he was seen as a progressive during his time, but from the vantage point of the 21st century, looking back, a little like Winston Churchill, there's some pretty horrifying things about Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, you have to reconcile the progressive with the imperialist.
And Charles Tyler in the story, you know, he's done his best to guide his nephew because William's father came to, as they said, a bad end. So, you know, that was also, I think, a reflection of the Roosevelt story, of the Teddy Roosevelt story as well.
Yes, I got that idea from Eleanor's father, who was a real wreck, just in terms of addiction and mental illness. And one of the things that I wanted to look at in this book was how Teddy did try very hard to save his brother, but there's enormous shame about, you know, manic depression or addiction, and how William feels that himself. And sort of there's an enormous facade that wealthy people at this time put forward that doesn't allow any kind of public acknowledgement of pain.
Well, the outpouring of grief for the victims of the Titanic disaster are in contrast to the reaction to the death of the Italian immigrant woman that gives the book its title. Her death is immediately associated to her ethnic origins, meaning it must have been the result of her criminal associations or somebody's criminal associations. And Jane Prescott, whose close friend Anna is an Italian-American, doesn't jump to that conclusion, though. But everybody else seems to.
Right, because of Charles Tyler's work, he's just coming off a big triumph where he's rescued a little boy from a Black Hand or mafia kidnapping, and they have threatened that if the people who've been arrested go to jail, there will be consequences. So when the nanny dies, people, A, leap to the conclusion that the Black Hand has had some sort of revenge or was trying to kidnap one of the Tyler children. But also there's a subconscious or not so subconscious assumption that, you know, Italian means crime. Even if you personally are a good person, we don't know who you know, who are your family. People just immediately leap to the conclusion that she was vulnerable to corruption in some way. And, you know, because Jane has a very different experience growing up with Italian Americans, she doesn't leap to that conclusion. Also, as a fellow domestic servant, she's aware that, you know, your employers don't always trust you, and they sometimes make very specious assumptions about you.
And, of course, you know, while this backdrop of the public funerals and the mourning and the committees that are set up to honor the dead in the Titanic. The woman who's been murdered, her life is packed away and eliminated immediately. There's essentially within a day, there's no trace of this woman anywhere.
Right, and their major concern is, will it cast a pall on the wedding? And, you know, how do we kind of get past this for the children? And they see it as an assault on them, the Tyler family. And, you know, their major concern is, what is the danger to us? And it's Jane who has to raise her hand and say, aren't we concerned that a woman has died here? this isn't actually just an attack on you. And, of course, Louise's father becomes very concerned about what kind of family she's marrying into. Is there a threat against the Tylers that he needs to be aware of? So that's why he sends Jane off to investigate.
And you touched on this in an earlier answer when you mentioned that Teddy Roosevelt's brother was probably depressed. And the way people reacted to mental illness in this story didn't surprise me, but I guess on the one hand it didn't surprise me, but then it did, because it was so hidden and so all these euphemisms for it, you know, troubled, or if it was a woman, she was delicate constitution. There was no confrontation that there was an issue.
Right, and they think they're being very kind by preserving dignity. You know, you wouldn't, you know, to air that sort of thing or to talk about it isn't helping somebody. It's airing their shame. I mean, that was one of the things that fascinated me about people of this class. It's not that they meant to be cruel. They genuinely thought they were preserving their loved one's standing in society as best they could, and, you know, hence the secrecy.
Jane, as you mentioned, is sent by Mr. Benchley to go have a look at this because, you know, she had, in A Death of No Importance, she had discerned what was really going on, although it might not have been the conclusion that everybody wanted. And readers, you're going to have to read the book to find out about it. Just came out in paperback. And Jane is a very intelligent woman, and not just her sheer IQ, but her emotional intelligence. She can really read people, and Mr. Benchley understands that. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons she's sent to investigate it, but it's also in her day-to-day with her fellow servants. You know, something will happen, like one woman who she doesn't really like that much is wrestling with a vacuum cleaner, and Jane tells her that she's too smart to be a maid and should do something else. And I found that very interesting. Like, that was sort of a shocking moment. Like, you're right.
Right. Yeah, that scene came about by accident. The fellow maid is Bernadette, and she's sort of a thorn in everybody's side, and, you know, I think Jane says she has more wits than her job made use of, so she kind of exercises them at other people's expense, and you think she's sort of comic relief, but the book, in 1912, there's an enormous suffrage march in New York City, and one of the other arcs of the story is women figuring out what their possibilities and their options are and wondering, is that enough? So in this book, I gave Jane several female co-workers in the Benchley House, and they all represent different views of women's potential. And in that particular scene, she, rather than be irritated by Bernadette, she says, you know, you need a new job. You're really too smart for this job. Go out and find one.
And You mentioned that Jane has a lot of female friends. One of her friends that predates her time in service is Anna. And we met Anna in the first book, and she had a much bigger role. But she comes back in this book, and she's a young labor organizer of Italian descent. But when Jane talks to her about suffrage and the parade that you mentioned, the 1912 parade, Anna just says, you know, I've got too much to do. And I thought this was an interesting perspective, as you touched on before, on how suffrage was viewed. You know, at the beginning of the book, Jane feels she's not political. By the end, she thinks, yeah, I am kind of political.
Maybe I will march.
And we should note that next year, 2020, is the 100th anniversary of women's right to vote in national elections in the U.S. And I still find it mind-boggling that the country is more than 260 years old, and we women have only been able to vote in national elections for 100 years. I think it's something that everybody should think about, not just women.
Well, one of the things, I mean, Anna doesn't care about voting because she feels like, well, it's voting for this capitalist or that capitalist. So until we get rid of the capitalist system, what's the point? But as Jane points out, if there's really no point, why are they stopping us from doing it? You know, if our voice were heard and they weren't scared of that, you know, you might have a point, but clearly they are nervous about us being heard and having power. So why not try and grab it?
And of course, once they did have power, women were one of the primary motivating factors behind the passage of the Volstead Act, which is prohibition. This was a very big deal.
Yep. I was just researching that for book three, where Jane has a reporter friend, Michael Behan, who says, well, you know, the good ladies of Illinois have gone off to vote, because I guess in Illinois you could vote at that time as a woman. And he said, now 16 counties can't get drunk. This is not going to recruit people to your cause. But, you know, of course, women whose livelihood was tied to a man's ability to hold down a job, alcoholism was very threatening. And I guess many of them had moral objections, but probably many of them also felt that this was a threat to their economic livelihood. So let's get rid of the drug. And, you know, certainly we have very strict drug laws for stimulants other than alcohol in this country still, so.
So it's just an interesting, as you said, it came from an economic, you know, sort of women's desire to maintain some sort of stability in the home. They were dependent on their husbands for the most part for their livelihoods, for their lives and their children's lives. And this was a way that they saw that they could protect themselves. But at the same time, it's very regressive.
Right. But I guess if we think of it in terms of if opioids were totally legal, you know, there are probably communities in America now that would like those banned because they've been so destructive in many communities. But yes, I mean, why didn't they go vote for child care or, you know, better education funding or equal pay? But I guess you don't get it right exactly when you first start exercising power.
I'm curious, your first book in the series, A Death of No Importance, has been out more than a year, and The Death of a New American, the second, has been out about 2 weeks. And I'm curious what the reaction from readers is, you know, men and women. Did any of the reader feedback surprise you and make you ask to yourself, wait a minute, did they read the book I wrote? You know, what was the reactions?
There were very strong reactions in the first book. There's an execution scene, and rather than try and describe that, because Jane would not have been allowed in the room with the electric chair, I sort of substituted the history of Tip the elephant, who was an elephant in the Central Park Zoo, who was actually brutally euthanized. Several readers wrote to me and said, why, this is such a horrific, horrific scene. Why did you put it in? You know, I feel I can't lend this to friends now. And I said I wanted it to be horrific, because when we execute adults, there's sort of a weird ethical gray area. We don't feel as moved sympathetically as we do with animals. Animals we just have pure empathy for. And I wanted people to feel the horror of what it is when a community rejoices over someone or an animal being put to death, and a life being ended. On the plus side, people have written that they like that Jane is not in some ways a superwoman, you know, that she can't do everything, that she is very much a woman of her era, you know, that she's extremely smart, but she doesn't go forth and make, you know, clear-cut pronouncements of obviously it is this way or that way. I think they find her relatable in her, you know, search and for what is true, what is right, what should I do, how involved should I be. So it's been nice to see people react to her favorably.
Well, Jane is not the only character in the series who has grown and changed. I think that in The Death of a New American, if it was to have a sort of a subhead, it would be Louise Benchley Grows a Spine.
Yes.
She's very pliant and just kind of a wreck with a total lack of any sort of self-confidence in the first book and for about two-thirds of the second book. And then she sort of snaps too. And I thought that was really well done and really a significant transformation, not just for Louise, but for sort of, for, you know, she represents that category of woman, you know, in mm-hmm. the story. She's an upper class woman who's sort of been bullied, and she, you know, her sister, who had her own troubles in the first book, and this sort of a persona non grata now because of a big social faux pas. You know, Louise has come into her own. She's going to be married to this socially prominent guy. She's a very wealthy woman. She's going to have to take a position in society. And somewhere along the line, this sort of clicks, and she says, okay, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Difficult for you to sort of draw Louise out?
No, because I like Jane. I like Louise a lot. And certain things that aren't easy for her, I can relate to. but I always knew that there was a brain there, and I'm sort of fascinated by people who have enormous fears, and then the thing that they fear happens, which does happen to Louise. She faces a setback and a real challenge to her security, you know, so much so that she has a choice. And I think confronting the thing that frightened her the most actually gives her enormous strength, where she has to decide, am I going to keep on this path that has been kind of laid out for me, or am I going to make some demands of my own? So I like that she grows through crisis, and she'll keep growing in future books.
Well, you mentioned your third book and some of the research you had done into prohibition. And I'm assuming that if you haven't pushed the send button on the new book, you're close. And I was wondering if there's anything else you can tell us about it. We know that Mr. Behan will be back. Jane, of course, will be back. Louise will be back. Tell us more.
Well, in this book, Jane goes on vacation. Because I wanted her to have some fun. She's a young woman. And also, readers were noting, my, she's awfully active out of the house for a lady's maid. It's 1913, and in this book, I'm looking at art, I'm looking at ragtime, I'm looking at department stores, and what is considered beauty and what is not. Louise gets tied up in a salon performance of stirring scenes of the Emancipation, because it's the 50th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation. Meanwhile, Jane is going to her uncle's refuge for an annual dance, and when one of the women at the refuge is murdered, suspicion falls on Jane's uncle, so she's going to have to rescue him from mob vengeance in this one.
So you're keeping it close to home in this one.
Yeah, I thought, you know, we've been to the Benchleys, we've been to Oyster Bay and Fifth Avenue, and I haven't really talked about, you know, the refuge on the Lower East Side where Jane grew up and her uncle, and I wanted to explore more of that part of New York.
Well, we very much look forward to that. It'll be out next year, so we'll have to wait, and hopefully you and I will be able to talk again.
I would love that.
Thanks again for joining us. I wish you the best of luck next week.
It'll be very fun, yeah. Yeah, just to see people. Oh, there's Walter Mosley. Oh, my God.
Well, enjoy yourself, and thank you again.
Thank you.